Morning, everyone. The Dharma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle. So often when we begin this practice, we really don't know anything about it except that we want to meditate and get calm, feel better, have a little bit of sense of encouragement that there's possibility, untapped possibility. But then as we go on, the Dharma, the teachings of the Dharma, the really long tradition of people aspiring to really be awake, clear, open-hearted, goes way, 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 way back. And they have left all kinds of teaching traces that we inherit. So it takes a long time, took me a long time. I think of myself as a Dharma dunce. It took me years and years and years to finally feel as though I had some sense of how the whole thing works together. So don't worry if you have not a clue, because that's fine. And the beauty is that this is all about our inherent capability of being really present. And it's impressive how much dedication, determination, and practice it can take to be really present much of the time. My teacher, Chosen Bay's, always calls this the practice of no gaps, not losing track of what's going on right here and now. Today I wanted to talk about faith. There are two terms that we don't talk a lot about using these words, and one is love, and one is, faith. It's a different kind of faith than we think of in our cultural heritage. It's not faith in someone or something outside of ourselves. Rather, it's trust in our innate open-hearted eye to see what's truly emerging right now. Faith in the tradition of awakening. So it's not, faith doesn't refer to ordinary mind. When we say faith in mind, which is one of our chants that we chant every time we have a full day of retreat, which we had yesterday, we chant faith in mind. And this mind, this word mind, is used freely and a lot, and it can be puzzling what it's referring to, but it's not referring particularly to only ordinary mind, although ordinary mind is part of mind. Ordinary mind, the mind of thinking, the mind of thoughts and beliefs and kind of cognitive representations of the world. It's not the ordinary mind of picking and choosing or thinking. It's not the stores of memory, but it includes that. Or our beliefs, but it includes that. Or opinions, the mind that has opinions and defends them, that sorts out and says this included, that excluded. The mind of opposites. Although when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, well, we can always name some opposite. So what's the opposite of faith? Well, what I usually think of as the opposite of faith is fear. And because whenever I find myself in a fearful state of mind, I remember, oh, what about faith mind? And immediately I have some relief. Because faith mind is also the mind of not knowing, seeing through what is being constructed that is fearful. So the ordinary mind is what we bring to practice, and we are generally really identified with. It's everything that we identify as ourself, our history, our lineage, our ancestral lineage, where our families come from, our beliefs, our political party, the things that we love and the things that we hate. It's all part of this ordinary mind. Ordinary mind is the mind of complaint and the mind of not enough and the mind of me and mine. This is mine. This is me, that's you. This is other over there. But when we refer to faith in Buddhist practice, it refers to something quite different. Faith in the great way, in the noble path, in our inherent enlightenment, and commitment to a way of life that is awake and responsible, able to respond rather than react. So we could say our ordinary mind reacts, and our faith mind is free to respond, to see and respond, to see deeply into and respond appropriately. These are the words that are often used. Our faith mind is open to all of our experience, doesn't exclude any quality of experience, is willing to experience everything that comes our way. Our faith mind is awake to the interdependent nature of everything, impermanence of everything. Every state of mind comes and goes. Every phenomenon comes and goes according to conditions. The term in Buddhism is causes and conditions. Everything is caused and conditioned, and therefore impermanent, as conditions change, as different causes come into play. So faith is partly the faith in the ability to be able to wake up and to grow, mature, and deepen, no matter what our intelligence or our background, or our education, or our scripts, the scripts that we live out. With the right conditions and clear and sustained determination, at the right moment, we can all wake up to our true nature and the nature of our life. At the right moment, which is always right now. It's not we wake up once. We stay awake. We fall asleep, we wake up again. Oh yeah, I was asleep. Oh, I forgot. Which is the feeling, the experience we have in the morning when we wake up. It's like, oh, I forgot. So usually we take our life as all of the particulars of the life, all of the emotions and desires and the things that we hate, hate itself, emotions, and all of the suffering that that all brings to us. What the Buddhism affirms is the first noble truth. The first of the four noble truths is the truth of difficulties. Our life is full of difficulties and problems, no matter how awake we are, because they come up not because of our narrow mind. They come up because the world of form is constantly changing and very complicated, very complex. So let's say something doesn't go right. Oh, something really bombed. Oh, that was really... really off, or wow, I really made a hash of that. Have you ever had that experience where you're just like, oh no, what did I do, or what happened? We had wishes, we had expectations, we had requirements, and they didn't happen that way. And actually, most of the time, things don't happen the way we think they're going to happen. I mean, I'm astounded how often I wake up in the morning with an agenda with, I think it's going to go this way, and then right from the start, it begins to veer in a very different way. So actually, the more flexibility and good humor we have, the more interesting our life gets, the happier we can be. But instead, we often take all of these failures personally, and we get swept into self-doubt. And in practice, in our lives, this kind of doubt is about the unsureness of our own abilities, or skepticism about this practice, which definitely comes up. It very often comes up after the initial flush of love, that the crush that we all get initially on Zen. And then we have some experiences that don't meet our picture, and then we can be really disappointed and get very skeptical about the whole project, which is a good thing. Because skeptical mind is part of our, it's part of our life. We get skeptical, and why not? Because this is a way of inquiry. And so any time a doubt comes up, okay, this is the very practice itself. We don't have to be afraid of doubt, but just not believe it, but look into it. What is it that is happening here that doesn't seem genuine to me? Or what is my understanding of what I thought was going to happen? So we get to know ourselves, and we get to know the world as it's presented, as we think it's being presented, much more intimately. So doubts can assail us, and they can pull us around in our lives, and they do, and also in our practice. And the doubts in practice, about practice, really can undermine our determination. Determination that's really part of a life of true faith, a life of practice. This is another kind of determination is one of the three, it's kind of the triad of great doubt, great faith, great determination, are all extremely central to living a life of practice. And we call it practice because we don't believe there's any time when we don't practice. All practice. Practice is a word, I mean, another term that's used in the Chan tradition is cultivation. But what are we doing in our life but cultivating ourselves, our life, our conditions, continually? If you are a gardener, you know it never ends. It doesn't need to end. The pleasure and the fruits and the vegetables come from the process of cultivation. They're part of the stream of cultivation. So great doubt, great faith, great determination is all necessary for great awakening. And actually we call it doubt, but actually it's more a question. Great questions, great question, a deep and natural inquiry, which is the same as this not knowing, don't know mind. Not fixed, not claiming ground one place, but any understanding is in the flow. We are always in a flow. We are always in temporary conditions. So great doubt is a deep question, a deep and natural inquiry that spurs our efforts. It can feel like curiosity, or it can feel like desperation. And actually, probably, how many people come to this practice through curiosity? Raise your hands. How many people come through desperation? Yeah. I came through desperation. And it doesn't matter how we come. It's kind of the beginning teaching, which is that we all have our own temperaments and our own conditions, and we work with them. So one of the beauties of teachings is that there's so many and so varied that we can each be addressed, we can each find confirmation of our experience somewhere in all of the teachings. So this practice always leads to discovery in our own ways and in our own time. And we discover that the way of practice is reliable and is a liberating path. It's ongoingly liberating. Another way of saying that, it is ongoingly disillusioning. Sometimes when we feel like something dearly held is swept away, we feel disillusioned in practice. But I always think, well, okay, good riddance illusion. That's what I'm doing. I'm wanting to be to be aware of what is the delusion, what is the mistaken understanding of this condition that's skewing things for me, right? So we'll say small doubt and great doubt. Small doubt based in doubting our small self. And it always has a sense of being separate from life. It's a narrow viewpoint when we're attached to a narrow idea of who we are. And we get stranded in our lives and tend to confirm our misguided beliefs over and over again, which is what I would call a script. Nobody loves me would be a script. Or I can never do anything right. Well, that is a deep commitment, a belief like that. It's going to bring about exactly what the belief is. Shoulds are another one. Shoulds rob us of our life. Should is like a thief, which can rob us of our determination and the sustained energy to keep going and to be wholehearted in our approach to anything that comes along. I think of a member of our Sangha who just a couple of days ago got a really bad diagnosis. He's facing a lot of trouble, at least maybe on his way to dying. And his approach, he's a person of great faith that has come from a long life of lots of losing faith, losing the path, and then regaining. And what he wrote in his email, his wife wrote it, was that I should tell the Sangha about what's going on for him. And that is... it's a statement about his great heart, his sense of inclusion. We share this life and we share this death. We all are sooner or later going to get the diagnosis. And we don't turn away from it. And what is turning toward it? Well, there's this fear-faith thing. Well, yeah, there's fear. But much, much more obviously expressed by Jim is faith, his faith. That this is the natural order of things. And that's the beauty of living a life of faith, is no matter what it is, we can open to it and not feel as though there's something wrong. There's something wrong with our life, there's something wrong with ourselves. So that brings up a lot of shoulds. A lot of shoulds. I was just visiting a good old friend of mine, and a friend of ours who's really much younger than us, died very suddenly. Now he should, because he lived, he ate right, he exercised, he really took really meticulous care of himself. He should have lived a long and healthy life. But that's not what happened. There are a lot of shoulds that just are just ideas. So we need to keep at our practice as a way of life. It's an entire orientation to looking directly at our experience for the truth of our experience. When we talk about truth, we don't mean once and forever. We mean, what is this? The truth of this particularity, which is temporary. We sit in Zazen. That's a practice. It conditions the rest of our life. We sit and flow breath by breath awareness. First one moment and then the next. Whatever comes up, I know that most of us did not stay in the moment steadily concentrated for the entire sit, both sits this morning, right? But when we have a practice, we can watch with amazement where the mind goes. And that is a form of wisdom. I mean, that's a source for tremendous wisdom because we get aware of, oh yeah, look at this. This is the mind. And all the different things that the mind can bring into our life that we then, that color how we perceive what's actually going on and narrow our choices for responding because we're so taken up with a certain image of what's going on that we miss what's actually going on. That's one of the ways that Zen practice relates to the rest of our life. This is why we emphasize regular meditation. It cultivates a certain clear seeing. And we also deepen our ability to concentrate and notice nuances and complexities in our own mind stream. And this goes on. There are a number of people in this room who have been meditating for a really long time. And isn't it amazing how you can continue to see things about your own process, your own attitudes, your own responses that you never noticed before? I mean, all the time. It really wows me. Keeps things very interesting. So we could call the practice of Zazen self-emptying. It's how Zazen functions and is a real gift in our practice. Cultivating presence, open presence, self-emptying the constrictions and misidentifications and dearly held limits, limiting beliefs. I am like this, I'm not like that. If I don't understand the nature of my own experience, I impose a narrow path from the outside, which is paved with concepts and conclusions, and then I become a prisoner on that path. We see this being enacted in the public sphere with a vengeance right now, but it's always happening. It's nothing new. This is just the nature of a life lived without a practice of inquiry. But then I can wake up to this wide and changing and ongoing generative moment. To just what is, just as it is, in all of its nuances and complexities. And I also come to understand that this self is dependent on conditions and is ever-changing and provisional. And trust comes from all of this. Faith mind is generated by inquiry, genuine inquiry. We chant affirming faith in mind, and there are these lines, with single mind, one with the way, capital W, way, the Buddha way, all ego-centered striving cease, all small me's cease, doubts and confusion disappear, And so true faith pervades our life. It's not that doubts and confusion disappear, but we sure know when we're in that state of doubt and confusion and can look into it. I mean, one of my sure habits now is when things come up that are really giving me a hard time, I always go and sit. That is faith in action. Sit and quiet down, and invariably I get insight that is useful. And my upset is dispersed because I'm not so confused about all of the components of the situation. So in a life of faith, we no longer privilege one thing over another, but instead see what is arising, accept what is arising, look at our direct experience, which frees us to respond to our true conditions. We like some, we don't like others, but it is what it is. And in that way, the Buddha way is very practical. It's a clear-eyed way. I want to read a poem. Those of you who are Sashin have heard this, but why not? Here we go again. This is called Accepting This. Yes, it's true. I confess, I have thought great thoughts and sung great songs, all of it rehearsal for the majesty of being held. The dream is awakened when thinking, I love you. And life begins when saying, I love you. And joy moves like blood when embracing others with love. My efforts now turn from trying to outrun suffering to accepting love wherever I can find it. Stripped of causes and plans and things to strive for, I have discovered everything I could need or ask for is right here, in flawed abundance. We cannot eliminate hunger, but we can feed each other. We cannot eliminate loneliness, but we can hold each other. We cannot eliminate pain, but we can live a life of compassion. Ultimately, we are small living things awakened in the stream, not gods who carve out rivers. Like human fish, we are asked to experience meaning in the life that moves through the gill of our heart. There is nothing to do and nowhere to go. Accepting this, we can do everything and go anywhere. That's Mark Nemo, for those who like to read poetry. Accepting this, that's faith mind. Faith mind equals accepting this, responding to this. Trusting, not knowing what comes next, but willing to be open to whatever it is. Just as the atmosphere sustains the earth, and the earth sustains the atmosphere, faith sustains our practice, and practice sustains great faith. So we should consider our own faith. Great faith emerges from a vow that is bigger than any of us. The vow to awaken has swept along through the ages and sweeps us into this practice and expresses the determination to see our lives through, to see our lives throughout as awake human beings. Consider the strength and determination of our Dharma ancestors who brought this tradition forward through the millennia to us, to benefit us. This is our inheritance. With a human life, we inherit the possibility of fully realizing our human life. Consider the compassion that the strength of their determination is rooted in. And we can ask ourselves, how determined am I to express the full contours of my own life, my own gifts, my own offerings? How determined am I to live wholeheartedly? To find, what am I holding back? When do I hold back? How is it that I hold back from being authentic and offering what I have to offer, however small, however immediate? Am I willing to use this life rather than being used by it? If we have a small vow, then we practice with a small perspective. If we have a great vow, based in great faith, great inquiry, and great determination, then we can fully accept our inheritance and open the gates of our heart and live all of our energies fully to benefit everything and all. And this is really a joyful way to live. When you trust your life and accept your inheritance, you can relax and live in true faith. I think of faith as a fuel which is much more refined than oil. Faith transforms our small and limited doubt and hesitation into the Noble Eightfold Path of Awakening, moment by moment and occurrence after occurrence, situation after situation, conditions after conditions, using everything in our life to guide us, everything in our toolbox, and receiving everything as an offering, as an opportunity to be open and alive and responsive. So it takes us beyond a small and self-centered way of living and enables us to meet all occurrences as they scatter in their own directions, which they do every day. And great faith allows us to be spontaneous and trust the wide reach of every moment. So may we all cultivate our determination and our willingness to look more deeply into things when we find ourselves in reaction, and commit to a life of practice. Everything is practice. We can be awake moment by moment by moment, except when we're not. So, do we have a minute to open up a couple of comments? How are we doing?
Sort of.
Okay, about